Grant Collins is a relationship coach, a talent leader, and the founder of Building with Bri, a personal empowerment and matchmaking brand that helps singles rebuild self-trust, date with clarity, and create lives they genuinely love. Drawing on more than 20 years in HR, talent acquisition, leadership development, Bri blends strategic insight with deep empathy to support people through transitions in work, life, and love. Through her thriving solo coaching experience and international connections, and modern discreet matchmaker service, Bri guides clients to strengthen self-worth, heal old patterns, and build intentional relationships instead of getting lost in the noise of dating apps. Alongside Building with Bri, she leads Rose Talent Consulting, advises organizations on hiring and culture, and is expanding her work into single empowerment retreats and a forthcoming workbook designed to help people come home to themselves before they pursue partnership. Gosh, are you one of triplets? There's a lot there. I'm not sure whether you managed to clone yourself.
It's amazing. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. You know, it's amazing how much free time individuals have. And no, I'm telling the truth here, right? Like, how many times do you just, you know, do individuals sit down in front of a TV set or something like that? And, you know, so I try to make the most use out of my time and follow my purpose, which is I love helping people. So, yeah.
It sounds like you're doing it in abundance. So you spent 20 years in HR and talent leadership before founding Building with Bri. Mm-hmm. When you look back, do you know what the first hints were you wanted to work more in the coaching and relationship work rather than the sort of more traditional corporate roles?
Yeah, so it really started, you know, I would say at the beginning of my career, I was working in retail management and ran operations for, you know, a large big box retailer. And when my children were younger, decided to take a step back from that. But in the operations role, I oversaw HR, you know, everything from the P&L down. And after, you know, when my children got older and went back to school, I thought to myself, you know, what did I love most about operations? Because I knew that I didn't want to go back and work 60, 70 hours a week again. That chapter of my life was over. But I knew that there was a piece of the business that really attracted me to it and that I enjoyed. And that was helping others in HR and just recruitment and finding the right talent for the right roles. Because at the end of the day, if you have the right people in the right places, you're going to be successful. People are going to be happy. They're going to want to come into work. And so that's when I really pursued my career, focusing strictly on HR and recruitment. And with that, you know, I had a lot of fantastic experiences and worked in a lot of different industries. And one day I'm enjoying my role working for a large, you know, medical device company. And, you know, I got the dreaded HR email that says, you know, hey, you know, we have to talk, you know, would you be interested in doing this or this? And I chose to create Rose Talent Consulting because I figured, you know, with my network and everything else that I had. And honestly, it's been such a just rewarding experience because, you know, most people wake up every single day and, you know, have good intent and want to do well at what they're doing. But sometimes they're in positions that they're just truly unhappy and it really affects all avenues of their life, right? If you're going to work and that's really where, you know, majority of people spend a lot of their time, why would you be someplace that you dread being? And it just, it spills into everything. So, you know, with that, within Rose Talent Consulting, I had talent acquisition, career coaching, and then leadership development, HR. And then it was probably about a year and a half ago. And just through talking with my clients, my coaching clients, I was thinking about it. And, you know, I noticed that some people really, you know, didn't have the self-confidence in themselves that they could have more or that they deserved to work in a role that, you know, brought them peace and happiness and joy. And they felt good about it. So that's when I went and got my relationship coaching certification. And because I was like, you know what? Relationships affect every aspect of life, right? It's not just who you're dating. It's your parents. It's your friends. It's the person that's working at the corner market. It's your role at a company. And I was like, how can I help people through this? But then with that work, came Building with Bri, and I was like, you know what? As a single individual, I'm divorced, and you know, I've been divorced since 2019, and my children are a little bit older now. But I remember just being so lonely and thinking that, you know, I wasn't enough, and I worked through all of that personally. And I was like, you know what? How can I help others do the same? Because, you know, just because you're not in a relationship doesn't mean you're not worthy of attracting one or having one with yourself while you're, you know, in the process of looking for that next partnership. So that's kind of how it all transpired.
One of the things you say on the Building with Bri website is before you can connect with someone else, you have to reconnect with yourself. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you could just explain a bit more what that means and how would somebody go about reconnecting with themselves?
Well, you know, all of us wear different hats, right? Like I'm mom, I'm a daughter, I'm an ex-wife, I'm, you know, I'm a business owner. And, you know, outside of all of those roles, who are you without the labels, right? And it's really just kind of getting centered with yourself and really thinking about who am I? And what do I bring? And what's my purpose? And once you identify that, and it's definitely, you know, an ongoing process, right? Like, you know, you can't solve all your problems overnight, and we're not perfect, and you're constantly going to be working on yourself. That's why they call it practice, right? Because you're constantly practicing to be more comfortable in your own skin and, you know, be open about who you are as an individual. Like, I mean, I even know myself personally, if you told me 25 years ago that I'd be on podcasts talking about relationships, you know, I'd be like, nobody would want to listen to me. Why would they want to listen to me? Right. And so, you know, it's all about being confident in who you are, but also to recognizing where you do have opportunities to work on yourselves, because none of us are perfect. And, you know, I'm far from it. And, you know, I've done things, you know, in my life that, you know, you wish you could change or whatever else. But at the end of the day, all you can do is live in the present moment, because the past is in the past. You can't change it. And the future, we don't know what that looks like yet. So why spend all that time just, you know, wasting energy on things that, you know, you can impact your future with choices that you're making in the moment, but you can't impact your past. So, you know, why continuously beat yourself up? Just continue to grow and learn more about yourself and what works and what doesn't.
It's hard, isn't it, sometimes, though, to, if you've been through a difficult, even an amicable divorce, it's or breakup, it's very natural to think, gosh, and maybe some people don't, but I say for me, it would be, gosh, what did I do wrong? How did I fail that relationship? Mm-hmm. What did I do? And I guess it's, transitioning on from that to thinking about, it's not necessarily what you would change, I guess, it's just whether... Yeah, more. I guess it's more about working on and understanding yourself. Is that fair?
Yeah, I really, you know, it's okay to look back, right? Like things happened in the past, and you know that you made mistakes, and you know now. Yeah. Aware of them, right? So moving forward, when you're doing that self-reflection, like how do you work on that? And maybe it's not something that happens overnight, or maybe it is something super simple that you could just change. And maybe it's a thought process. I mean, there's so many little tweaks we can do on a daily basis, right? To help improve our lives, improve, you know, how we're talking to ourselves, because we talk to ourselves more than anyone else that we're ever going to speak to in our entire lives, right? As soon as, you know, you're talking to yourself in your head, like, you know, what's you put in between those 2 ears is what you think is true. And if you're constantly thinking negatively about yourself or judging yourself for past mistakes that you can't change at this point in time, like, why carry all of that heavy energy and bring that into your next partnership, whatever that looks like, or your next really anything, job or, you know, dating, family. So, you know, all you can do is, you know, really acknowledge it and then try to find solutions to work towards it. And sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's really difficult and hard and emotional. And, you know, I always say, feel the emotions, like let them just flow through you. Because if you continue to bottle them up inside and not address them, you're just going to consistently repeat the same patterns and getting the same results. So,
Do you tend to see, I'm not sure it's the right word, but common patterns in singles? And I'm thinking particularly about high achieving professionals. So we've all been sort of taught or led to believe that, you know, success is doing incredibly well in your career, and it's incredibly well in your relationship, and incredibly well as a family member, as a parent, as a daughter, as a son, as a wife, husband, and as a boss, as a whatever. And are there things that people that are very high achieving and almost, I guess, perfectionists in a way, that things that they do that erode self-trust and erode their ability to connect with somebody in a relationship?
You know, high achieving people, I always like to say they're no different than anybody else, right? So, and I used to tell my coaching, or I tell my coaching clients this when we're doing interview prep, right? Like, mm-hmm. you don't know who's sitting across from the table from you. They might just be intimidated by you as you are them. Because a lot of the times management sometimes, you know, doesn't have the skill set to, you know, interview and things like that. And, you know, somebody put it on their calendar and they know they have to go talk to people, look at their, right?
Yes, so, absolutely.
And so, you know, everybody is human at the end of the day, no matter, you know, how much money you make, or if you decide to just go, you know, kind of float and travel and, you know, go. You know, I actually, it's so funny. I have this YouTuber I love to listen to, and he now has decided to move into Airbnbs. So he actually gave up his lease and he moves to a different location all the time. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's who you are as a person and owning that. So, you know, I would say people, the most challenges that they run into is putting up walls and not allowing people in because of past hurt or past experiences. And they call them boundaries, right? But are they boundaries, or are they a concrete wall that nobody's getting through because you're afraid of getting hurt again? And, you know, you've experienced that pain. So naturally you're going to, you know, want to protect yourself, but sometimes people are just so adamant about it that it's like, well, now you're eliminating individuals that really, you know, you could grow with, you can learn with, have companionship with, because you have a checklist that you have to stay within. So, you know, I always try to encourage clients to really, you know, think outside the box. Are you open? You know, maybe if it's 80% of what you're looking for, can you overlook the other 20%? Because at this point, you know, in our lives, especially if you're a little bit older, and even individuals, you know, maybe that are younger, you know, we've all had some sort of experiences that have shaped our views of relationships and love. And, you know, at the end of the day, wear some flexibility on that, because you're not going to find the perfect human. So,
yeah, that's a nice thing that about, dating apps. And I've sort of seen friends go on dating apps, different platforms and things, and they're sort of putting an age range and then a likes and dislikes and this. And I get to the end, I thought, my goodness, there's probably one person in the world that fits that criteria. and I don't know whether that's a failing in dating apps. I guess historically we might have met. I met my wife at work. We worked together, and, you know, we got to know each other, and you know, eventually sort of fell in love and got married, which is wonderful. Or a friend will say, oh yeah, there's this really, really great guy that I know, Brian, I'd like to meet him. Yeah, come just give him a chance. And you probably go along with that. Whereas I don't know whether we're much more selective, or we almost select out people that might be good for us and different from our past partners. And I don't know whether that's technology's fault or dating app's fault, or whether it's just how society is today. I'm not sure what the question is there. do you know what I mean? That you almost, as you said, you almost sort of filter down and filter. You tick all the filters, and you eventually, right, is this one person here, and they happen to live in Nebraska or Alaska or Australia. So, okay, what are you going to do with that then?
Yeah.
It seems to be hard.
So dating apps really, I think, are, you know, it's dating apps in general are for some people, right? And those individuals may not be ready for a relationship yet, or maybe they're looking for that instant gratification, and there's nothing wrong with that, right? But people on dating apps that are not intentional and purposeful in what they're doing can actually impact other individuals' self-confidence. So, and with that, right, their algorithms, and the dating apps want you to continue to have subscriptions, because that's how they make their money. So if you are right? So if you're not matching and you're removing your sub, or you have your subscription and every single week you're paying $19.99, guess what? They're making money. You're getting matches still, but are they quality matches, or is it, you know, impacting your self-worth, or is it making you feel bad about yourself? Did somebody ghost you? Was it a situationship that you thought somebody was really looking for a relationship, and at the end of the day, they weren't. They were looking to, you know, fill their void of loneliness with just, but they're not really serious about you. So there's nothing, again, nothing wrong with the dating apps for individuals that's what they're looking for. So, and if you're not ready to make that step and be committed and look for partnership and do that work on yourself, then yeah, sure, there's a space for you, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're looking to really match with somebody and find that really intentional connection, for me, it's like, why would you go on there? People, you know, use fake photos. There is a lot of filters. They're going to say what they want you to hear, and they're putting their best foot forward. So again, you're not really getting an opportunity to know them well. And sometimes it just ends up to endless texting and a waste of time. And for busy individuals, or, you know, people that don't have a ton of time, they're wasting hours doom scrolling on these apps, looking at individuals that, you know, on the surface are great, but probably haven't done the work that they need to do to have a successful relationship with you, or maybe are not invested in it.
It's really interesting. I don't know why I never thought of it before, but almost the business model of a dating app is for you not to find your life partner. Mm-hmm. As you say, once you find them, it's like, well, turn it off. Then it's no more income, is it really? But I've had friends in particular, female friends that have gone on dating apps and met somebody and thought, oh, I'm just going to go somewhere. And then the other person is just looking for a hookup. And some women are looking for hookups as well as men. But it's when people, as are by default, disingenuous on the app. And yeah, like I say, this say what they think the other person wants to hear to get the result they're looking for, really. Mm-hmm.
And so for me, when I'm working with my matchmaking clients,
yes,
you know, they go through a very in-depth interview process. So I'm definitely a skilled interviewer after all my years in recruitment. And so, you know, very much, I'm sure like you do in your work, once you hear something, you go down that rabbit hole because you want to learn more. And yeah, I'm a curious person. So, you know, through that process, we have our consultation. Then, you know, if it seems like they're a good fit for the service, absolutely, I want to work with them. But even past that point, I have them complete a 9-page questionnaire about, you know, their lifestyle, their sleeping patterns. I mean, all of that comes into play when you're getting into a relationship. And then at that point, you know, from there, I'm looking to match people very similar to what, you know, I do with organizations. Talk to me about your culture. Talk to me about what you're looking for in this role. So it's a human approach and takes the algorithms out of it. So, and definitely more of a grassroots efforts, which, you know, like when I met my husband, it was in person. I probably would have never met him unless I, you know, bumped into him, or, you know, we didn't see each other. So, you know, trying to bring it back to more human and not an algorithm.
This might be an unfair question, but did you ever, when you were interviewing people, did you ever interview somebody and thought, yeah, this guy's perfect for me? Or is that, do you have to say, no, not in the pool?
I completely remove myself out of it. And the reason why, it's not good business practice, right? So I can't take my client. So, but everybody loves to ask that question. And it's amazing how many people will actually reach out to me about matchmaking, but not want to matchmake. They just want to meet me. And so I'm like, well, I appreciate that. And, you know, I'm flattered by everything that you're saying, but at the same time, I'm not available for you. And having that difficult conversation with people, because sometimes, you know, you don't want to hurt individuals' feelings, and, you know, but I applaud people that, you know, are confident and get out there and just ask, right? Because a lot of people don't do that these days. They keep it internal and, you know, to themselves and hope that somebody's just going to end up on their doorstep.
Yeah, it's this like, you know, when people say, oh, I really don't like my job, I want to find another job. And so, what are you actually doing? And, I'm looking at LinkedIn occasionally. Okay. It's not, sometimes things don't arrive on your doorstep packaged with a nice bow. It doesn't necessarily always work that way. Mm-hmm. Life isn't a different job. In the 9 pages of questions, well, gosh, that's a lot. What are the sort of not asking you to give away your trade secrets, but what are the sort of deeper questions beyond age and location, interest, those sort of things? What are the things that help you establish what somebody's values really are?
We get into just about everything from, you know, lifestyle, political views, intimacy expectations, first date expectations. You know, that's something that's really confusing for a lot of people right now, is even that first date expectation.
Yeah.
Do you expect the man to pick up the bill? Or do you want it to be 50-50? And women nowadays are sometimes comfortable paying the 50-50. And it's really getting a good understanding of what their expectations are for that first date and how people behave. Because a lot of the times, you know, it could be something simple from, he's fantastic, but he didn't walk me to my car. And that's an easy fix. Completely easy fix. So, you know, I like to kind of sort all that out prior to, you know, them actually meeting. So that way I can actually coach them on and say, you know, this individual, this is what they're looking for. This is what they mean by this when I create their, you know, portfolio. And, you know, really just talk them through. So it's coaching them through the dating process. So.
Mm-hmm. So it's when you work with people, what tends to be the biggest barrier to real intimacy? Is it fear of being vulnerable? Is it some unresolved grief? Is it overwhelmed nervous system? What is it that is the barrier? And then how can you help people move through that?
Well, I would say the biggest barrier right now is just people being willing to open themselves up and be really, truly open to a relationship and not judging or, you know, putting unrealistic expectations on each other. So, like for me, when I'm talking to individuals and they're like, well, I only want, you know, him to pay for everything. And, you know, I expect him to buy me the bag or whatever that looks like. And you know what, that's not a realistic expectation. Sometimes, you know, people, we all work, we all value our money. And would you do the same? As a female, would you take a man out once a week and drop $200? Do you have the cash flow to do that? Or, you know what, are there other ways that you can spend time with each other and think outside that box? So that's really one thing I see, you know, that men run into and that they're frustrated with. From a flip side of it, though, you know, with women, men have sometimes really unrealistic expectations about the package. So even down to, you know, maybe she's not blonde, or, you know, I need her to be exactly in this age range.
Oh my goodness.
It's, I mean, I hear everything under the sun. And with that, you know, are you flexible? Will you date somebody with black hair or that's a brunette? You know, are you okay if they're 5'7" instead of 5'6"? And not just getting so, or even too, from an age range, right? Like if you only want to date people between the ages of 40 and 50, are you going to say if because they're 51, you're not going to date them? And sometimes they do. And to me, you know, age is just a number once you get past a certain point in your life, right? So, because you've probably most likely, some people have had kids, they've been married, they've been divorced, we've all had careers. And, you know, what is an age difference, you know, in that time frame? And I think people could be a little bit more flexible and open to what they're looking for, and they might be surprised on what's on the other side of it.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I'm sure both of us can think of 5, 50-year-olds that we know that are completely different from one another. That some of them are super active, some of them are not active, some of them are thoughtful, energetic. And it's funny, isn't it, when people get, especially when once you get a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's 7 years between my wife and I. So yes, when I was, I don't know, if I was 25 and met her, and she was sort of, what would that be, 17, 18? Oh, that's quite a big gap. But now sort of 50 and 56, 57, it doesn't feel like anything near as big a gap. But yeah, it's funny that people have that thing about it. So do you find there, and it sounds like there must be, do you find there are people that would like to be clients that you just don't think are in the right headspace for what you offer? And I wonder, how do you let them down gently?
So I just honestly let them talk to me about what their experience is, where they're looking to be at, where they're at currently. And then from there, you know, really determine whether or not they're a fit. So there was a gentleman I spoke to, and I'm really big on networking and getting out and meeting individuals. So I'm always at events and things like that. And I was talking to him about it, and he's like, I just got divorced. I have 50-50 custody of my kids. I just got a brand new PlayStation, which it's a community, right? And that's a community I'm part of, and they're making connections and relationships. And he said specifically, I don't have time for a relationship because I'm doing all these things, but I'd like to meet somebody and spend time with somebody, but I really don't have the time for it. So to me, I'm like, well, you know, I appreciate your honesty, but where you're at today, you're not a fit for the clients that I'm working for, because they're not just looking for somebody to spend time with, to keep them busy. They're looking for somebody that's open to, you know, a long-term partnership. So.
And what are your thoughts on, some people perhaps would say there's one person out there for everybody. You've got to find that one person, versus there are a lot of people out there for everybody. Where do you sit on that?
There are a lot of people in life that you're meant to meet, is really, and everybody that you meet is a lesson. So for some individuals, it is one person their entire life, but also too, maybe there's somebody else out there for you that you connect with, but you choose to be in a partnership and work together and stay together for the duration. It's a choice you make every day. Being, you know, and hopefully they're your best friend and you can tell them anything and you can trust them and they're going to be, you know, gentle with you. But also too, if not, like, who's to, like, I have met so many individuals since my divorce, and each one has been an experience, and I've learned something from each one of those individuals. And some people, you know, for me, I feel they are my soulmates, even though maybe we didn't end up romantically in a relationship together, but we have a relationship still to this day. And I know that I can have conversations with them. I can ask them for help, and that's okay. So it really, you know, it's all to personal preference. And really, you know, the expectations that you built as a child on what it should look like and what you're willing to live with in the moment. So very different for everybody.
Yeah, very much so. I think it's a tricky one. There's 8 billion people on the planet to think there's one person for a person. And it's, yeah, people come into your life and leave your life for various reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's, things aren't sometimes meant to be forever. Sometimes things aren't meant to be forever, but it's, it's fascinating when people, have a sort of set view on who they should be with and what they should look like. Because if they miss out on that person, then what? That's it. It's over, which can't feel like the right thing to do, really. One of the things, I guess, that, and the dating apps are a good example of this, I think, is that over the last decade or more, we seem to have change a little bit as a society in general about how well we're able to connect with people. And I'm not just talking about intimate relationships. This could be with friends, with colleagues, with neighbors, with whatever, that we read about a lot more people being lonely and having fewer friends and not being able to connect properly in real life. People work remotely. We don't see each other that often. And I wondered if you find that when you talk to people that perhaps have been in a relationship for a long time, they come out of it and they're like, oh my goodness, I don't have a network of friends. I don't have relationships with people. It's how do you handle that? And first of all, do you believe that is an issue? And then how do you handle that lack of connectivity in real life?
In general, communication has changed so much even since, you know, in the past 20 years. I always joke about it, but like when I first met my husband, cell phones just came out and we weren't like texting each other all day long. We were still on the phone.
Same. Yeah, absolutely.
And so, but in today's day and age with dating, a lot of people just text. And I really, really encourage individuals who are just getting out there and dating that, number one, keep the texting to a minimum, because sometimes you can text yourself right out of a date because you are putting it, you know, in the words are there, but you can't hear the emotion behind it or maybe the intent behind it. Or maybe you just responded to something quickly and they were looking for something. You haven't established a communication flow yet with this individual. And you're just texting. You're really not understanding how they talk, their pauses, you know, what lights them up, what doesn't. So all of my clients, I recommend to them, if you want to text real quick in the fine just for pleasantries, that's great. Mm-hmm. But I always recommend move it quickly to a phone call, because in addition to that, do you like the way this person sounds? Like if you're going to plan, this is somebody that you're really getting to know and want to potentially have partnership with. Can you handle what they sound like every day? Do you like the way they talk? That's huge. So, you know, you kind of kill two birds with one stone there. You learn what they sound like. Also, too, you can hear the emotion in their voice most likely, or how interested they are, or whatever that looks like. But with dating, I try not to over-communicate prior to the date. Get a chance to know them, see how they communicate, and see, you know, how it flows. So, And then the second part of that, with people that are getting out of relationships and are like, you know, here I am, I'm all by myself. You know, that's a weird spot to be in. I've been there. I thankfully have a lot of really great girlfriends that I've had since the fourth grade, and they were there for me. But even just the transition of maybe moving into a new home or things that you used to do every single day with another individual, and all of a sudden it's just you. And that's why it's so important to do that thriving solo work, because if you are not comfortable in your own skin before you even have an opportunity to meet your next potential partner, how are you going to show up as your best version of yourself if you have all this self-doubt or judging yourself or unrealistic expectations of even yourself? Like, you have to do that internal work to really show up as your best self. And again, it's a work in progress. You're not going to be perfect every day, and you have to practice every day, but you don't want to repeat that same mistake or pattern again. So I always say, you know, take a little bit of time, get to know yourself and do the things that you love to do. When I got divorced, I actually created a divorce bucket list. And you know, I'm serious, because I was thinking to myself, there was things that he just didn't want to do with me and I didn't want to do with him. And that's totally okay. That's why we're not married anymore. But one of them was going to see Dave Matthews Band. I love Dave Matthews. And so since my divorce, with the exception of COVID, I have gone to see Dave Matthews every single year. And recently I've just upgraded the experience because I love him so much. I go both nights when they're in town. So I'm like, I can't get enough Dave. But like, what can you do to really, you know, bring joy to yourself and be comfortable within your own skin before you go meet somebody else and do the things you want to do? Like, don't be afraid to go out and eat by yourself. I do it all the time. And if I want to go out to dinner and I'm thinking about, you know, the special dish that I like, I have zero problem grabbing a seat at the bar or going getting a table for one and just people watching and enjoying my dish and, you know, just enjoying my own company. And there is nothing wrong with that. So
it's so funny you say that. There was an article in one of our newspapers over here today. It was a lady writing it, and she was sort of saying about a lot of her friends would never dream of going out by themselves or doing this. And it was something I used to be a consultant 100 decades ago, but and I just have to go to hotel bars to eat on my own or restaurants to eat on my own. Otherwise, I wouldn't have eaten. I was staying in a hotel. I was on my own. I was working. And so I go to the cinema on my own. I go shopping on my own. I go to the gym on my own, go to the restaurant on my own, whatever. And it's, yeah, just a thought. But a lot of people, I would say to them, oh, I can never go and eat by myself. So, but if you're really that stressed, take a book, take a magazine, take a newspaper. Well, there wasn't smartphones then, so you couldn't sit there and look at your phone. But just go out. But yeah, a lot of people especially if they've been in a relationship, they've always done something together with a partner or with friends or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just that thought about going out. Sometimes it's nice to go out to a restaurant and be able to order what you really want to have rather than what you think you can get away with saying in front of your partner. So it's really interesting you say that. One of the things, I guess, that people are nervous about, and I certainly would be, is that I've been in a relationship for a long time. It didn't have to be a long time. It could be 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. And then you meet somebody on your platform and it's going really well and you get on really well together. And at some point, the question of intimacy, physical intimacy, is going to come up. And how do you handle that when you've been with somebody, only one person seen you naked for 20 years, and suddenly they're in your bedroom, you're in their bedroom, in a hotel or whatever, and like, okay, right, I'm going to quickly get dressed in the bathroom, dive under the sheets. Mm-hmm. But how do you handle that? The meaner side of things.
If you're at that point in a relationship with somebody, they've seen you in person, right? Uh-huh. And they've gotten to know you well enough that they're physically attracted to you and want to take it to the next level. Be comfortable in your own skin, right? It doesn't matter what you're wearing or what you have on underneath, or, you know, just be confident in yourself and, you know, do what you feel comfortable with. You don't have to, you know, wear something special. You know, it's okay if you have to take your Spanx off, or, you know, if you're a man and, you know, when you first started dating, you didn't have a beer belly, but now today you do. Like, everybody's seen this already in person with your clothes. Like, they understand the shape of your body. And if they're at that point, that's probably the last thing they're thinking about. So.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, how nervous that makes, I suppose. But mm-hmm. especially if your last relationship, your partner went up with somebody else, or mm-hmm. and in your mind, they were younger, a hotter version of you, whatever. It's like, oh gosh, what's the next person going to think? But like, say, if you're at that stage in the dynamic of the date or whatever, then mm-hmm. that person really wants to be with you. They want to look at you, how you look. They want to see you. They want to feel you. They want to hold you. It's, yeah, yeah. So in the work you're doing, so I know you're building out a Thriving Solo workbook and empowerment retreats. So what will they feel like? How will people experience those, and what will that experience give them, do you think, or hope?
Yeah, so the workbook that I'm working on, I really wanted it to be something simple, easily digestible for people yep. that are busy and, you know, be able to work at it at their own self pace. So I'm actually in the final process of that. It's out for review right now for the final grammar check and all that fun stuff. So hoping that it's getting published relatively quickly. It's been one of those labors of love, and it's been, you know, something I've been working on for the past year, and, you know, it's a little bit here, a little bit there. So I'm really excited to share it with everybody. But it's, you know, made so you can, if you're sitting home and you're in a bad spot, you can pick it up, and, you know, there's something to do each day that you can work on. And with that, what will happen, you know, once that's published, I'm going to go ahead and, you know, bring it out into more retreats and, you know, work through that process with it. So yeah, it's really exciting, but I'm almost at the finish line.
And what happens in the empowerment retreats?
So with that, it's really about being in community and finding like-minded individuals, but also creating a safe space for them to really open up and talk and, you know, work together, you know, and helping finding solutions and holding that space for somebody else that is potentially going through the same thing that you're going through. And there is so many people, we've become so secluded as a society, but at the same time, so connected. Like, I'm talking to you, you're over the yeah. pond, and we maybe never would have spoken before if it wasn't for this great thing called the internet, right? And, but that's taken away from that individual conversation or just meeting like-minded people with common interests, because you can really self-pacify with just about anything on the internet and troubleshoot and learn that. But sometimes just having another individual that is really experiencing the thing, same thing that you're having, creates just such a wonderful dialogue. And, you know, so really a safe space for, you know, individuals to come together in community and, you know, work through and talk through their problems and, you know, do fun exercises and a little bit of travel in there as well and, you know, have fun. So
it's interesting, isn't it? I totally agree. The technology is wonderful and it's allowing us to sort of talk. I can see you. I can see the sun streaming through the curtain. And you looks fabulous.
Oh, and I apologize.
I love that. It looks absolutely beautiful. It really, really does. The color and the warmth of it is sensational. So don't do anything about that.
Oh, love it.
But there is something about, yeah, being physically in somebody else's, in someone else's energy field. That's not too woo-woo, but people do give off an energy and you can sort of have a feeling for somebody and you can connect with somebody in a sort of different way. And I can sort of send you energy through the screen, but it's not quite the same as literally being there, sitting there talking to you. So I do think there's a huge amount that we've perhaps forgotten a little bit. And maybe it started during COVID and the pandemic, that we've sort of forgotten just how powerful and how wonderful and how warm it is to be around other people. If you think when you go to somebody's, I don't know, engagement party or a birthday party or a wedding, whatever, there's just an energy in the room, isn't there? There's like a physical feeling of energy. Yeah. And that's probably why so many people hook up at weddings or birthdays or whatever, because they're around that energy and it feels very positive.
Yeah.
So if you, and this is a big ask, you don't have a crystal ball, but if you were looking sort of 5 years ahead, what would your boldest ambitions or vision be for what you're doing today?
Just that I can really continue the work and help individuals and make a positive impact in their life by giving them the tools for them to help themselves. So right now there's so many different shortages, right? And you know, people have a lot of mental health things that they're going through, challenges. Yep. With, you know, things going on in the world, you know, even the news, and there's all this stuff. And there's just people really, to me, just, I'm trying to look for the right way to say this. Therapists, psychologists, super helpful, love that. But for somebody maybe that's not ready to take that step, how can you help yourself?
Yeah.
Right? Because at the end of the day, you're responsible for your own being every day. And, you know, talking to somebody once a week for an hour, you know, I offer that service as well, but you still have to do the work every single day. So how are you doing that? Like, what tools are you using outside of, you know, therapist and psychologist and, you know, whatever it might look like, or even going to the gym? What tools are you using outside of that time that you're using for self-development to continue your growth? So this is a addition to all that. So
you said at the beginning that when I said are the triplets, and I think it's more like quintuplets, right? But you were saying that people have a lot of time, they spend scrolling or watching TV or whatever else, all those different things, which they do. But do you, and I mean this in a very caring way. Mm-hmm. Do you manage to find the time or make yourself nurture and look after yourself? Because my only, I don't know you obviously, but my only slight concern is, gosh, does you get enough time for yourself? How do you look after and nurture your well-being mentally and physically? Are you very religiously in terms of committed about doing that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm human like everybody else, and I have emotions and feelings, and there's stuff that I run into. And some days I'm like, oh my gosh, what was that? Like, or you know what? I'm just done with today. Like, with that though, I try to incorporate every single day, you know, getting outside and vitamin nature. That for me is very healing. And so I love to go for a good walk, even if it's cold. Right now, weather here in New Hampshire's 30 degrees, and you know, one day it was 9 degrees, and I still got out there for that walk. So, and then also too, I like to have a slow morning. I do not like to rush out the door in the morning, and it's not because I can't or I'm not capable, but I find that I'm in a better headspace when I'm not rushing in the morning. So I build my schedule around that. And, you know, you have to recognize what works for you and incorporate that into your life as much as you can. And if you can't, because let's say you have to be at work by 8 a.m. every single morning. Okay, great. So you know you have that. Now, how can we incorporate that time in around it? And not everybody wants to be in the 5 a.m. club. Like maybe your club is 10 o'clock at night. And maybe it's the weekends, or, but just, you know, what is comfortable for you in your space, and, you know, really just, you know, try to embrace it and live it every single day. Cause that's really where the good work comes in, when you're taking that time to check in with yourself and let the thoughts flow, because you have to think about them. So you may as well, instead of suppressing them, deal with it in the moment. And if it's something that is too heavy, write it down, put it aside for later, and come back to it.
I'm glad you get time for yourself. I do think being out and with and in nature is so underrated. Mm-hmm. I can physically feel, I'm lucky enough to have an amazing little dog, and we go out in the morning for a walk or for an hour or whatever in local woods and forests and things. I can physically feel the difference if I don't get to do that until late in the evening for some reason. There's a physical tension that doesn't release or whatever. Just, you know, just being outside, as you say, whether it's rains or sun or sleet or whatever, you've got to get out and dog things to walk. It's just, being outside and being able to do that does feel very different. So my final question, I guess, or almost more of a, is it a question? I'm not sure. So if someone is looking for a new relationship and feels confident in themselves and they feel that they're ready for a new relationship, but perhaps they're struggling to find the right person, or they just aren't quite hitting enough with people they are meeting, what would you say to those people? How should we go about understanding what looking for a relationship really means?
Well, that's where you have to do that work, right? What do you want, number one, out of a relationship? So for me right now, personally, I'm not necessarily looking, but if companionship landed in my front door, then I'd be, you know, I would be okay with that right now. Somebody to maybe go out for a walk with, or go to the movies with, or dinner. But do I need somebody in my life right now that I have to live with them, or, you know, that I have to make breakfast for them every? No, I'm okay with that right now. So really understanding what you need in your life at this moment. And some people are looking for forever partners, and they want to start families and, you know, buy houses together. And like, where are you at in your journey of life, and what do you really want? And even down to, are you looking for friends with benefits? Okay, be honest about that, because there's somebody out there for you, but you have to be honest with what you're looking for. And you can't provide that lip service to individuals and say what you think they want to hear, because at the end of the day, you're just going to end up disappointing each other. So transparency is huge, within reason, obviously. You don't want to, you know, give everything away right off the bat, but just understanding what you personally want and then going from there. So, and I recommend that people get out and they enjoy hobbies. So if you like golfing, go to the golf simulators, and guess what? You're most likely going to meet somebody there that has similar hobbies and like interests, which then can help create those relationships. But sitting at home doom scrolling on the dating apps is not a super productive way of getting out there and doing it. You know, sometimes it's just that face-to-face interaction and, you know, putting yourself out there.
That's a fabulous answer. I do think there's so much in the whole being honest with yourself, what you're looking for, and don't be guilted into wanting or thinking you should be looking for something else, really. And I do think, and I know I seem to be slating the dating apps, but just, when you think about it realistically, it's almost like having a line of people coming towards you and saying no, yes, no, yes, no. It's horrible, really. Just literally, physically, just brushing somebody away or brushing somebody in. It's just not a good place to be, really. But I do think that's a a great way to look at it, being honest with yourself, what you're looking for. And then once you have that, I think that must come across very clearly to the other person, that they can see you're being genuine with what you're talking about, thinking about, looking for, mm-hmm. as opposed to, yeah, like I said, trying to be a people pleaser or trying to be something that somebody else says you should be, whatever. It feels very different.
And if somebody is honest with you and they're telling you what they want, don't try to change their mind. They're telling you exactly what they want. And a lot of times I feel like people in relationships are really just, you know, they're projecting sometimes what they're looking for onto the other individual. And then they're disappointed because they got a different result. And if you listen to the core of what they said, most likely you have your answer in it. So.
It's funny, isn't it? We have a tendency to do that as people. Somebody say something to us and you're like, no, that isn't what you mean. But I'm sure I just said it. Yep. It's sticking with that and not trying to change them. Because there's somebody else that is looking for what you're looking for. As you said, whether it's friends of benefits, whether it's a 50-year relationship, whether it's whatever it's going to be, there's somebody else there looking for it. And trying to persuade somebody into something they're not looking for, mm-hmm. it's not going to be a recipe for happiness. It really isn't. Thank you. Keep doing what you're doing. Maybe try not to add too many more things to it. Just now you've got to get the workbook out, get the retreats going. It feels like there's definitely a sort of autobiographical book out there that you should be writing at some point when you've got time to do that. So it feels like your story is very, very different. You got that sort of corporate background, very commercial, but then you managed to transition that into like a pragmatic approach to life and love, which I think is something that not many people have. So yeah, thank you so much for your time. I really, really appreciate it.
Of course. And then one last thing I always like to tell people, life is not linear, right? You go with the flow and, you know, kind of pull back those expectations. So yeah.
That's a good place to end. It's not, I mean, if you went back 10 years and told people what would be happening in the next 10 years, nobody would believe you. Yeah. So you look at what's happened in society in general, so then what's happened to us individually. So 100%. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Thank you for having me. This was lovely.